morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical man. You study him hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. And the guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring goes the bell. The cook and the lunchroom ready to sell.
Hello, everyone. My name is Leonie Heemson. Welcome to our show, Talk Out of School, on WBAI Radio 99.5 FM, where we focus on issues affecting public schools here in New York City, the state level, and nationally. Our show is also available for download as a podcast. During the next hour, we'll be talking to Mark Cannizzaro, president of the Council of School Supervisors and Administrators, about what schools are doing with remote learning and his views on some of the issues many parents and teachers are concerned about, including the cancellation of spring break, the DOE refusal to release mortality rate for educators, what should happen with school grades and teacher tenure decisions this year, and more. But first, I'd like to update you on some important education news, starting with good news. Yesterday, the Board of Regents and the State Education Department canceled the Regents exams and put out guidance that seniors who had passed their courses but hadn't yet taken all their Regents exams would be allowed to graduate from high school, which was the only rational thing they could do under the circumstances, but very, very grateful that they did it nonetheless. The second is bad news, unfortunately. Last week, the New York State Legislature approved a budget which froze education funding for next year at this year's levels, which with the rise in educator salaries and other costs will be experienced as cuts for many districts, including New York City. They also gave the governor the authority to make further cuts over the course of the year, though they can block them with a vote within 10 days. And then last night, the mayor put out a proposed budget for the city, which cuts back schools harshly, including $100 million in fair student funding, which is terribly unfortunate as many schools still only get 90% of their funding at the current time. Our schools haven't yet recovered from the 2008 recession in New York City, which led to a sharp growth in class sizes, which was over 10 years ago, and it would be simply awful if class sizes were allowed to increase anymore. We will have to fight hard to ensure that this doesn't happen. But since we have Mark Cannizzaro on the phone, and he's a very busy man, so I think we should get right to it. Mark, are you there?
I am here. Good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Thank you so much. Welcome to Talk Out of Schools. Thanks for being here. First off, how are you and your family doing?
Oh, thank you for asking. You know, given the circumstances, we're doing well. You know, we've had not only the COVID-19 epidemic hit our schools and many of the families we deal with. We did have a situation here in my house where my 23-year-old daughter, who happens to be a nurse, she came down with COVID-19, and she had a very difficult 2 weeks or so, but thank God she's on the mend now, and she's almost back to normal, so we feel very good here. Of course, every single day I'm hearing more and more tragedy in the families of people that, you know, of CSA members, as well as in their school families. So both their school families and their personal life, we're having a lot of sadness right now. But we're doing the best we can, and fortunately, I am doing well. I hope you and your family are doing well.
Yeah, so far so good, knock on wood. But you did tell me that you're self-quarantining yourself at this point. When do you come off quarantine?
Yeah, it's not even a self-quarantine. It was a doctor's orders after my daughter was tested positive. So Saturday we should be off quarantine.
Oh, well, I hope everybody stays well and your daughter recovers. And I hear you're still doing your job from home. How does the union function now with the shutdown?
Well, you know, after Hurricane Sandy, which we really weren't prepared for at CSA. We did not have a disaster recovery site for our computer programs and our internet and email and such. But we learned a lesson after Hurricane Sandy, and we went and did some major investment in technology to make sure that we would be ready for any situation where we were out of the office. So within a moment's notice, we were able to switch over to remote access to our desktop computers and all of our servers, and we've been using Zoom, although I know that's currently you know, on the do not use list for the Department of Education, but for the union, we've been using Zoom and having meetings every single day and meetings with our chairs and our executive board, as well as the internal offices at CSA. So we really haven't missed a beat. Of course, we do miss the face-to-face and personal connection with people, but we haven't missed a beat as far as operation.
Well, that's great. Before we get into the meat of the discussion, I think a lot of people are confused about the CSA because it's usually called the Principals Union, and yet your union represents a lot of other office holders as well. Is that right? A lot of other educators.
Yes. Thank you for asking that question. You know, when you read the media quite often, they refer to us as the Principals Union. The fact is we have about 1,700 principals, but we have 6,400 active members, which means the majority of our members are not principals. We have about 3,500 assistant principals and maybe 1,000 educational administrators that work in district offices and Tweed throughout the city. And we have supervisors, folks that go out and supervise our school psychologists and our speech providers. And we have a group of folks that really people don't realize. We have 200 early childhood directors that work in CBOs, and those members do not work directly for the Board of Education, the Department of Education, at this time, although it seems that more and more of their responsibilities are beginning to fall under the supervision of the department. But these are individuals who have master's degrees, and many of them have their degrees in supervision administration, just as our principals and assistant principals do. And they work in these city-funded, community-based organizations, providing 3K and pre-K services to our students. And in fact, they serve more students than the Department of Education in 3K and pre-K. And that's been a battle. This group has been a particular battle for us because we're trying very desperately to bring them into the realm of a living wage. You know, they do similar work to our principals and assistant principals, and yet they earn approximately 50% of their salary. So that's a group that we're fighting very hard for, and especially in these times, we need to do something for them, and not a lot of people know we represent them. So I'm glad you asked me that question.
Yeah, we had Alice Mulligan a few weeks ago on the show, head of CBOs for Equity and a pre-K director, and she spoke about this issue as being a great concern to try to keep pre-K directors in their jobs in the CBOs rather than going over to DOE where they would be paid more. And yet most of the 3K and pre-K kids, as you mentioned, are being served in the CBOs, thankfully, in my view, because schools are very overcrowded. Now let's get to some of these issues that people are discussing and are rather controversial among many. I don't know whether you saw today's New York Times, but it had a fairly deep article about the city and the state's delay in taking various measures in containment. And one of the things that many advocates and parents and teachers were concerned about was the delayed closure of schools. And it turns out New York City closed our schools days after San Francisco and the entire state of Ohio, even though we had many, many more confirmed cases of the virus at that time. The mayor kept on saying in his explanation that he wanted to protect the schools, but that seemed to me a strange phrase, given that he wasn't really focused on protecting the people in the schools. It was almost like he was thinking of the institutions as something abstract and apart from the people who go to school and who work in the schools. What did you think about that whole issue?
Well, you know, the decision to close schools, especially in New York City, in such a large school system, is not an easy one. I completely understood that it wasn't an easy one and that the implications of closing school are broad across the city. But, you know, it did get to a point in early March, I think it was maybe the 10th or the 11th of March, that I felt it was necessary to close the schools. And we did make sure that we notified the chancellor and the mayor of our feeling here. We knew that it would be a major undertaking to switch to remote learning, but it did get to a point. You know, we started to, you know, as you said, experience some increase in the number of cases. We were a little frustrated with the protocol from the Department of Health, or the protocol from the city, that the Department of Health had to confirm a case before the school would be shut down at that time for 24 hours. And those delays were causing some anxiety because people had confirmed cases, or at least self-reported confirmed cases, that wouldn't be considered a confirmed case, according to the city, until the Department of Health was able to respond and confirm that case. So we then saw, you know, Broadway shut down and major sporting leagues that, you know, generate billions and billions of dollars shut down. And we realized that it was just inevitable that we were going to have to close schools. So we made a push to City Hall and with the Department of Education to close schools at that point. You know, to be a Monday morning quarterback and say what was the exact date that was the right date, I can't answer that question. I don't know. But I do know when it became apparent to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, reportedly also, DOE told principals not to tell the health department if their staff were calling in sick with symptoms of coronavirus. And they were also apparently told not to tell parents about this. Is that correct?
Well, you know, I don't know that I would put it exactly that way. The schools were told to report to an email address, staying healthy email address in New York City. And what they were told regarding parents is that they shouldn't say anything was confirmed until the Department of Health said that it was confirmed. And what was happening in some cases were people self-reporting that maybe hadn't been tested at that time, and it did lead to some confusion. And then there were other folks that were reporting to the school that they had been tested and had been confirmed, but it just hadn't gotten to the health department yet and was causing a delay. So that definitely caused some frustration as well as some understandable anxiety out there. So I think that process might not have been the best process at the time, but I guess we have learned from that.
Hope so. The DOE is not known for its transparency, and I can tell you as an advocate, it often seems like they put more effort into hiding what's going on than disclosing it. There is still a big controversy over the fact that the DOE is not publicly reporting on the data on the deaths of educators and school staff. You know, individual deaths are reported in the media, sometimes through the families or friends of the people who die. But I'm talking about like disaggregated data, like how many educators have fallen sick, how many have confirmed cases of the coronavirus, how many have died. I assume that you get that information for the principals and pass it on. Is that correct?
Yes, we get the information. Well, especially when someone passes away, we get that information very quickly and we pass it on. We've had two deaths of our members thus far. We had Principal Desanne Romaine out in Brooklyn and Assistant Principal Amara Flores from the Bronx, who have passed away. I do know that there were several teachers and staff members that have all passed away. And I spend my evenings, you know, an hour before I go to bed at night, I spend sending messages to school principals, offering my condolences either for a family member or a staff member who have passed. So this is really hitting home, and it's quite sobering.
I think the UFT recently announced that more than 25 teachers had died, if I'm correct. It was mentioned in an executive board meeting. I can't understand why that sort of information should not be out there. Another controversial issue, as you know, that a lot of teachers and parents recently was the state and the city canceling spring break that was due to start tomorrow. A lot of teachers and parents felt that they were emotionally and physically drained from the effort of moving towards remote learning and were really looking forward to that break. I wonder what you thought about that.
Well, okay, so that certainly was a bit of a controversial thing. I'm going to start by saying it's true, we're all exhausted. The students are exhausted, the parents are exhausted, school staff, teachers, as well as my members, and we could all really, really use a break right now. We also understand that the governor issued an executive order, and when the governor issues an executive order, we have to follow the executive order. And it's certainly not lost on any of us of, what exactly we're dealing with right now. I mean, for some of our families, the only connection they have to the outside world, so to speak, right now is the COVID-19 coverage that they're watching on the television and their connection with the schools. So we understand how important that is, and we take full responsibility to do what we can in this type of emergency. And that attitude and that work ethic of my members is what makes it so easy to represent them. I mean, they're professional and selfless to a fault. They love their foods. And they see that, we have 10 million people in this country applied for unemployment in 2 weeks' time. New York had, I believe, 800 deaths yesterday. We see the stock market crumbling, and we realize that people are really suffering. And if we can do anything at all to ease some of that and provide some semblance of normalcy, we're happy to do so. I think the big, however, there from my perspective is that the communication around the governor's executive order, as well as the way the decisions we made and the way we rolled out some of this, I think could have been done a lot better. Had we slowed down a little bit, when things speed up, I think a good leader slows down and is reflective. And had we all slowed down a little bit, and the chancellor and myself and Michael Mulgrew from the UFT got together and rolled this out, I think, a little differently and rolled it out together, I think we would have had a lot less anxiety and anger out there. So I think that certainly could have been done better.
Yeah, just to clarify for people who aren't paying it, don't understand what we're talking about, I think what you're referring to is the fact that initially there was some sort of announcement that teachers and kids would get off Thursday and Friday and then would return to remote learning the following week. And then a few days later, it was told on, I guess it was last Friday night, that Thursday and Friday would not be off days, but would continue with some form of instruction, though it's a bit unclear to me what's supposed to happen. Can you clarify briefly what's supposed to happen on Thursday and Friday as opposed to the following week?
Sure. So what you said was accurate. I mean, on Monday of last week, the governor's executive order was made public, and it was really what should have happened as soon as that was made public is there should have been an announcement here in the city to all educators that, look, we're aware of this executive order and we're going to, address it, and we're going to, get more clarified information out to you right away or as soon as possible, just to reduce the anxiety level and then some discussion about how we were going to do that. What ended up happening is there was, there was a void, and that didn't happen, and rumor and speculation and different messages started going out, and people then thought that there would be no actual, communication between the schools and the homes on Thursday and Friday being the religious holidays. And then it was clarified later that there would have to be. Since then, there has been some information put out regarding what can be done during this break, and it was well done. You know, there was for each grade level. You know, they did it in bands like kindergarten through second grade, or pre-K through second grade, third through fifth, and so on, with different activities that students could engage in during this time, and then report back and do some work around some of those activities. Some of them including interviewing people and learning a little bit about New York State, or visiting museums virtually, interviewing your parents and your family. So there were quite a few activities that are, I think, appropriate for this time. The however is, you know, I think that they were rolled out a little bit clearer last night, and of course a lot of teachers and school leaders prepare way ahead, and they may have mm-hmm. already prepared something, which is fine also. But I think that, you know, had we done this a little bit differently, we could have started with, here are the activities that kids, you know, our students are expected to engage in. Could have been done probably with a lot less stress and not so concerned necessarily about day-to-day attendance during this time, and more concerned with the students have some activities to do over the spring break, which many, many schools offer anyway during the school year, work for students to complete during the break. And then it could be reviewed, discussed when they returned. It didn't quite work out that way. And I think that, you know, now the communication has improved. It did take a little bit of encouragement, to say it nicely, from the unions, to make the communication improve, but it certainly has improved. And you know, you have to give credit where it's due. We're thankful that it's improved, and we hope it continues to, engage. They continue to engage with us at that type of level going forward, because it seems like at least through the end of April we'll be out, and I would think it's quite possibly that it could go longer than that.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that's the case. A lot of states have already said that they're going to keep their schools closed for the rest of the year, and I can't imagine, given how serious the outbreak is in New York, that that's not going to happen here. Yeah. I talked to teachers and parents from around the city, and it seems like everybody's doing something different at different schools. Some schools are trying to maintain something like a normal modified schedule. Other schools are just having morning meeting and then assigning homework to kids, and may have office hours where kids can get feedback from their teachers or ask them questions. Is this variety of approaches across the city a good thing or a bad thing in your view?
Well, I could tell you that right now it's an absolutely necessary thing. We were not completely ready for transitioning to remote learning as a system. I don't know that we should have been. I don't think anyone would have expected this long of a period of time for as a system to be completely ready. The other thing that I think really needs to be considered is, regardless of how ready we are or were, the families needed to be ready also with devices that could connect to the internet as well as broadband or some type of internet connection at home. And it's certainly uneven across the city for obvious reasons. So to have a particular schedule that we ask everyone to abide by or conform to would be, in my opinion, impossible. You have some homes with no computer devices, some homes with maybe one for four different children that need to access the internet to get their work done. So to ask a child to be online for English at 9 o'clock in the morning may not be realistic if there are three or four of them in the home that need to access different classes. So I think that allowing the decisions to be made at the school level and figuring out what level of readiness each school is at, and giving that discretion to school leaders at this time was necessary. So whether or not it could be done differently in the future, I think, is for discussion. And, we're involved in something much more important right now. We'll discuss the future when we get back to our buildings.
So one of the other things that happened on Friday with the announcement that teachers and students wouldn't have Thursday and Friday off of this week was the announcement initially that schools should stop using Zoom, which is an online video conferencing tool, as well as Google Meeting Chat, though later the chancellor retracted that about Google Meeting Chat. And a lot of parents and teachers were and students were understandably upset about the fact that they couldn't use Zoom, which they found relatively easy to use and a good way of keeping contact with each other and seeing each other's faces and really maintaining some sort of spirit of collaboration. And apparently many students wanted to see their fellow classmates as well. I came out somewhat differently because I've been working on the issue of student privacy for a while now, and I was aware that Zoom did not have a contract or a privacy policy that aligned with the state student privacy law, and there had been many, many articles in the past couple weeks about ways in which it leaks personal student data in many, many potentially harmful ways. But my main concern is the fact that teachers have not, and I assume principals, have not yet really been trained in how to protect student privacy, even though we have a law that passed in 2014 that required them to do so. And I'm wondering whether you've seen any efforts by the Department of Education to reach out to principals or teachers about the issue of student privacy in general and how to do their jobs responsibly in a way that allows for the protection of student data?
So you said a lot there, so let me start from the beginning. You're right. There was a lot of frustration around the decision to no longer use Zoom because it was the platform that the majority of schools trained their teachers on in those 3 days back when we knew we were going to remote learning. It was an easy platform for students to be on, and there was communication that went on between the teachers and the students' families to get them up to speed, and it was a relatively user-friendly platform that was very easy. People are looking for some type of consistency right now, and there's not much consistency in the world, and the changes that have been coming down from the Department of Education regarding their schools and from the city of New York have not been as consistent as they would have liked them to be. So some sense of consistency with their online learning was comforting, and now to be changed is difficult, and to change to different platforms, and especially with our younger students, trying to communicate to them and get them up to speed is also a challenge. We do appreciate that the department said, to make the changes as soon as possible and switch over, as you can. That's certainly appreciated. And like you said, though, we certainly need to protect student privacy. I did hear of several egregious type of what they call Zoom bombing and different things that were happening that were just outrageous and wrong. So, I understand something did need to happen. But you're right, first we were supposed to go to Microsoft Teams, and everybody started frantically working to get over to Microsoft Teams, and then they heard that the Google platform, the Hangout, would be acceptable, and it caused some confusion. Regarding student privacy, principals, in general, have been given plenty of guidance on student privacy as far as protecting data and protecting student information. We have a acceptable use policy for the Internet. Folks know exactly who they can and cannot and when they can and cannot provide student data to. But as far as this online learning platform and as it relates to online learning or remote learning, there hasn't been much. Again, I don't think that anyone was ready to go to this extent to an online platform. So, we've gone system-wide. We started doing some things online. There was some remote learning happening through the last teacher's contract, but it was on a very limited scope. So system-wide, there was probably not the level that you're looking for. And again, Zoom was, you know, acceptable initially to the department, and then I guess with some more with some more research, as well as some of the problems that occurred, they decided to stop it. And I understand that they had to stop it. It just doesn't help, you know, people feel better, even though they had to do it.
Yeah, well, they've implied that they're trying to negotiate a contract with Zoom that does comply with the state law and protect student privacy. I know that one of the BOCES is in the process as well of negotiating a contract which any New York State district could sign on to and opt into, which would be a very good thing, I think, and we all hope that it happens. However, my sense of what's happened even before this is that there's been a laissez-faire attitude on the part of DOE that teachers could use all sorts of online tools like ClassDojo, et cetera, freemium, ClickWrap apps that may not protect student data appropriately and does not have a district-approved list of apps as some other districts do that... you know, attorneys have gone through and privacy experts have gone through to make sure that they do a good job protecting student data. And so I hope that this changes. The regs for the law that was passed in 2014 just came out recently, so hopefully the state will start enforcing the law as well. But I hope that all this confusion and upset does trigger a change in the mode of operation of the DOE so that they pay more attention to this important issue in general. One of the other issues that a lot of people are talking about now is the issue of grading and how students can be appropriately graded given the enormously different circumstances that we're all working on through right now. What are your views on that?
Well, my views are, I understand and they're right. I don't think that students can be fairly graded right now if we're talking about, you know, grades that are numerical or discriminate, you know, by points and, you know, what's the difference between a 85 and a 92 in this environment? I don't think it's possible to say. So I think that students have to be given some type of either pass, fail, or ABC or you know, excellent, satisfactory type of grades, but to try to discriminate as far as, you know, test scores and things like that, it's nearly impossible. Students have different access to technology. Students have different varying degrees of help at home. The extra work or the, you know, pulling of students in that needed a little extra help in that can happen in a classroom environment may not happen quite as well. So I just think it's common sense right now that something needs to be done more along the lines of general grading and how well students get their work done and so on, because it just doesn't make any sense to try to do it any other way. And no matter what you try to do, you know, I think we have enough questions about our grading systems when we're in school face-to-face with the children, and there becomes controversy around, you know, what grades are given at times to children and their questions, right? You know, why did my child get a 94 when I thought his average would have been a 96 or something like that? So we're just in a different environment right now. I think we need to focus on what's important, and what's important is, you know, keeping students engaged in some type of learning, their social and emotional health, and, you know, to worry about an exact grade right now is not what I think is important.
And a lot of teachers are also concerned about the issue of keeping attendance because they feel like there's a lot of pressure from DOE to keep attendance records, and they're worried about that. Can you tell us how you feel about that issue as well?
Yeah, I can tell you how I feel, and I can tell you from my direct conversations with the department, the chancellor included, that folks shouldn't be feeling pressure or that they're going to be disciplined in any way. The idea of keeping attendance right now to the best of our ability is to keep children safe and to try to, you know, make sure we're having interactions with students and make sure that, you know, they are engaged to some degree and that no one is, you know, missing in action, that we're not worried about any children in particular. So we are trying to take attendance, and we are doing the best that we can to take attendance, but no one is going to be held accountable for being 100% accurate at all times. The key here is when you haven't heard from a student and you haven't interacted with a student, reaching out to those families and trying to connect, and if you can't connect, getting to the district office for support so that we can make sure that everyone's okay.
Mm-hmm. So this is Leonie Hameson on WBAI FM 99.5 with Talk Out of School. Now we'd like to open up the phone lines. Please call in with your questions or concerns to Mark at 212-209-2877. Again, that's 212-209-2877. Related to this issue about grading and attendance is teacher tenure. I know of some untenured teachers who are very, very worried about how they're going to be evaluated and judged in this highly unusual, unprecedented time, and that they may lose their chance for tenure because whatever they're doing is now being interpreted as not good enough. What do you think should happen with teacher tenure in these very unusual circumstances?
Well, the same goes for our supervisors and administrators also that are up mm-hmm. for tenure right now. So, look, tenure takes 4 years to be evaluated for tenure. It's a four-year process for our principals and teachers, and it's a five-year process for our assistant principals. So my feeling is that whomever the supervisor is that is making this decision should have known long before today whether or not someone who's been with them for almost 4 years is worthy to achieve tenure or not. They should have known. Had they not been worthy, there should have probably been some real talk and discussion around that well prior to now. In addition, so my feeling is that we should be going ahead and making decisions on whether or not we're conferring tenure, we're asking for an extension of the probationary period, or in very rare instances, because usually people that aren't making it leave voluntarily long before the tenure decision time, but in very rare instances, it is going to be a discontinuance. But to do anything other than that, I don't think is fair to our folks. I mean, look at what people are doing right now. They've transitioned this system of almost 1 million children in 3 days' time to remote learning. And although it's never going to be the same as being in the classroom in the building with the students, they've done a remarkable job with getting children engaged. I see things all over social media. I speak to my members all the time. Of course, I know many teachers, one of them being one of my children, and I see the efforts and the work that is happening. And to say to people we're not going to confer tenure now, I don't think is reasonable. And if a supervisor doesn't know whether or not a person deserves to either get tenure, be extended, or discontinued by now, I think that person needs to reexamine their practice.
That's great. And one more issue before we get to calls, and then this may be an issue that we disagree on, is the issue of school leadership team meetings. As a parent advocate, I'm vehement and passionate about the issue of parent voice in the running of schools and the system as a whole, and we have something in New York City required by law called school leadership teams, which are supposed to meet monthly and really create a comprehensive education plan for the school and provide a organized method for schools, including principals and teachers, to get feedback from the parents in their schools. And I'm wondering if school leadership teams are going to continue monthly as required by the law, and how you feel, because I do have a sense that you feel differently about this.
Yeah, so you remember from way back when we talked about the lawsuit.
Yeah, I didn't want to bring up the lawsuit.
That's okay. So we don't disagree regarding the premise that parents need a real say and input and involvement in their school. I mean, 100%, we wouldn't be successful without parents as real partners, and we can't be successful without parents as real partners. I also think that school leadership teams and those meetings are important. I do not, however, think that it's necessary to have them for the next 3 months. I think that the schools, the teachers, the school leaders, the parents, everyone have been working more than overtime. I'm speaking to people who are up at their computer at 5:30 in the morning doing all their emails, and they're not shutting it down till 10 o'clock at night. Things are moving at such a rapid pace. There is plenty of communication with the homes. People, the school leadership team, parents and families tend to be the more involved folks. They are communicating. I just don't think that mandating right now that these meetings happen is necessary or going to provide, you know, enough return on investment, sort of speak, to say that it's necessary. Now, I'm not saying to people that are able to do it and feel that they want to do it and reach out to have these meetings, you know, fine. But to say that it's mandated at this moment, I don't think that's necessary. What the final outcome is going to be, we don't know yet. We're in discussion with the department. You know, it may be what you're saying. It may be that it has to be done, but that hasn't been decided yet.
Yeah, well, I will have to agree to disagree, because I think it's more important now than ever to have that kind of official organized role for parent feedback and discussion with the others running the school as to what's working and what's not working, especially at these unprecedented times. We do have several calls on the line. WBAI, you're on the air. Can you say your name, where you're from, and what your question is for Mark Canizzaro?
Hello, Lainey. My name is Zabby. I'm calling from Suffolk County. And thank you so much for the show. I've enjoyed it since its beginnings. I was there for the first one, I believe. And I appreciate this solidarity between the parents, the teachers, as much, you know, building solidarity between them. And talking about the cutting of educational budgets throughout the United States and bringing this back to the money issue, to financing education, this, I believe, is this whole thing is going to displace many teachers. I believe the future is for getting this 5G installed, fifth generation computering, where things talk to other things in your household. And I believe teachers are going to be, and brick buildings will no longer be there for students to go to, that everything is being downsized and cut and made the responsibility of the taxpayer. You know, it's in your house, you get the computer, etc. And in fact, there's a show that just aired on Sundays, starting a two-hour show, and I think it would be better named Conforming to the Brave New World, because they are trying to push remote health care as well, telecare. And, you know, they have, it's a new show. It's, it would have been better to have Bob Law's show extend for 2 hours than this happen. I think Dr. Majid Ali may be behind.
I think we got your question.
So here's the answer I wanted to give you. May 1st, I hope you parents strike and teachers strike on May 1st, the general strike day, and strike, because the teachers' strikes have been very influential. and they should be getting more pay, and they are overworking at home till midnight.
Okay, I think we get your point. A lot of people are concerned that with the move to remote learning, various people who are interested in either cutting school budgets or making money for ed tech corporations are now going to take advantage and say, this is the way our school should go in the future, meaning the loss not just of jobs, but the loss of the personal connection that for many people believe that it makes education work and makes it real. Other people say that now so many schools have moved to remote learning, the deficiencies of that system are becoming even more clear, and that this will stop the general trend towards moving towards more online learning, which was already happening in many schools across the country. Where do you come out on this debate, Mark?
So I agree with you. The one thing I really agree with the caller is when she said we deserve more money.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, no, I think what you're saying, look, there is a place for all this technology and education, and there is a place for even in the medical field and so on, but nothing is going to replace the face-to-face and human interaction of a school in a classroom, and I think we are really driving that point home right now. You know, our students miss us, we miss them, the families miss the interaction, and anybody, I think, now that tries to promote something to replace the human connection, the school-based classroom education, I think is going to be met with more pushback now than ever before.
Yeah, that may be the silver lining, let's hope. The issue of the budget cuts, I know, must be of great concern to you, especially the $100 million that the mayor just announced last night. He wants to cut from Fair Student Funding. We've had long struggles to try to increase that money, and a couple of years ago, the city council did force him to put $125 million back into it. Not all schools get 100% of the Fair Student Funding, and we've seen a lot of really unfortunate results, including big class sizes increased since the last recession. What do you think about the budget cuts that the mayor just announced?
Yeah, this is Fair Student Funding has been a project of mine since I've come to the union, and even well before that as a principal. We don't like to see budget cuts. We know that we're in a very challenging and difficult financial time, so we understand where that's going. But there is no need, in my opinion, there is no need to hit the classrooms and Fair Student Funding. We have a sizable budget. We're looking at $100 million right now cut to Fair Student Funding. I think that we could find that $100 million elsewhere in the department's budget. I'd be happy to sit down with people and help them find it elsewhere. But the last place we should be looking, the absolute last place we should be looking, is hitting schools and classrooms with this budget. So with that, I disagree with the mayor's decision.
Well, I would love to see that list from you sometime if you're willing to make it public, because we're going to be trying to make a list of cuts as well.
Sure.
Another caller, WBAI, you're on the air. Can you say your name, where you're from, and what your question is for Mark?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. My name is Mercedes. I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York. My question to Mark is, what are they going to do about nurses in schools being reprimanded for calling 911, that they need to go through the principal, for the principal to make the decision if this is an emergency? That was my experience when I worked at a school on Henry Street in Brooklyn, where the principal bawled me out and stated that I should try to get the parent to come to the school and take the child to the emergency room in a case where there was an obvious case of respiratory distress. The concern was that once you call 911, then the media would find out, and it will cause problems. So, you know, I think when you spoke about how they must communicate the coronavirus, it brought back that situation to me, and I thought I would just put it out there to you so that you are aware of what's happening to nurses in this school system.
That's a great question.
Principal cannot make a decision for a nurse.
Mark, do you know anything about this? Are nurses really told to tell the principal and not the call 911 if there's an emergency?
That's not correct protocol. If there is an emergency, a medical professional or anyone else determines this to be an emergency that requires 911, you call 911 and then notify the principal. I can't speak for individual experiences, but the protocol is, in an emergency, call 911 first.
So the issue of school nurses has been raised recently with the fact that not all schools had school nurses. And then with the coronavirus outbreak, I think the DOE hired a bunch of nurses quickly to try to man all schools. But then other people have told me that the DOE uses a lot of agencies where they're paying nurses more than they would if they were regularly hired the normal way. Do you know anything about those issues?
Yeah, there is a nursing shortage in the schools, and that's the reason that the agencies are being used, is because they can't find enough nurses. But there is a dire need for a nurse in every building, as far as I'm concerned, and some buildings don't have them. Our early childhood centers that I was mentioning at the start of the show, many of them don't have them. And in today's day and age, it's necessary. It's completely necessary to have a nurse in a school. And that is something that we have advocated for, and we will continue to do so. Like I said, they're up against a shortage, and we need to find more and identify more. These are critical professionals that should be there.
I think we have time for one more brief question. You're on the air. Can you say your name and where you're from and what your question is for Mark?
Is this me?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Rachel. I'm from Brooklyn. And I've been running a CBO from home since March 23rd. And I don't know who your guest is because I turned it on about...
Mark Canizzaro, the president. Yeah, he's the president of the Council on School Supervisors and Administrators, which is sometimes known as the Principals Union. But that's an incorrect name.
My old union. Okay. So I can tell you, I can send you the budget cuts that I just got in the email yesterday, the exact districts that are being cut that would have had more 3K coming in the coming fall, but because of this horror that we're living through. Leonie, I'll send that to you in email because I don't want to mention that on the air. I'm sensitive about those things. I'm very, very concerned about the fact that that the mayor and the chancellor both handled the closing of schools and CBOs in this horrible, horrible way. And I agree with the first caller who was concerned about remote learning becoming a possibility. I know, Mark, that you don't agree, that you think that would be a horrible thing, too. I did the DOE for 17 years in all different districts and all different schools. And this whole issue of how the city has been handling this is just despicable, and it's disrespectful not only to teachers and parents, but first and foremost to children. And I have to say... I'm looking at the clock, so I know you got like two more minutes. I have to say that for the people that I'm paid by, and I will not say the name on the air, that the staff that I supervise remotely, as it were, is doing remote learning with 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds, and I observe.
How does that work? How does that work? Remote learning with.
Don't interrupt me. To the children every day. They're using either videos or books. They're making projects with the children. They're doing science lessons. So the way it works is that the twos did a lesson with melting ice. So the parents were told in lesson plans that they submit to me once a week what they're going to be doing, how they're going to be doing it. They let the parents know what equipment, as it were, will be needed. They made like a fake volcano kind of thing. They've been doing it as hands-on as possible, they've been telling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I think that sounds like a reasonable compromise given the situation. They're not making kids sit in front of screens for long periods of time. I'm sorry that we have to come to an end now. This is Leini Hameson, host of Talk Out of School on WBAI 99.5 FM Pacifica Radio. Mark, thank you so much for being here. I know how incredibly busy you are. Can we check in with you later in the year as things evolve, do you think?
Of course, Leini, and thank you for having me. It was my pleasure, and I'd love to continue a discussion.
Okay. Thank you again. Our show is available now as a podcast if you missed the live version. But in any case, please consider becoming a WBAI buddy to Talk Out of School to show your support for this show by logging into givetowbai.org or calling 516-620-3602. Again, that's 516-620-3602. I hope you'll join us next Wednesday for another Talk Out of School. Until then, please be careful and be safe. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye. And the music from head to toe.